the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Hines along with Vince Ferrara. We are going to be joined momentarily by Chris Doering, a former Gator receiver. He is with the SEC Network. We look forward to talking to him about the SEC. A lot of news with the SEC over the last week or so, including the announcement of the 10 conference game schedule only, and the schedule for who the two additional opponents are going to be from cross-division games will be announced later this week, we believe. And they also, the SEC, coming out and saying that you cannot start football practices until August the 17th. So that's another announcement from the league, and that's adjusting Tennessee's situation a little bit because they were scheduled to start their practice on August the 7th. So a little bit of a delay in terms of getting started in that regard. So we've got that and a lot more with the SEC to visit with Chris Doering. Hopefully we'll get here in just a second to join us. And the other thing about the SEC and what they announced was that once they start on August the 17th, you've got 40 days to get in 25 practices before the season starts September the 26th, and they're invoking a 20-hour rule during that time frame. It used to be unlimited, not the case. So they're going to put in the 20-hour rule. Now, and a lot of this, as far as the 20-hour rule, a lot of times when school starts, when you're in session, you're reduced from unlimited to 20 hours. I don't think Tennessee will be in school at that time. I haven't looked at their schedule as far as when they report. I don't know what everybody else in the SEC is doing, but they will invoke the 20-hour rule starting August the 17th for the for SEC. So not the traditional fall camps that we're used to from the SEC. And the 10-game conference-only schedule will be in place. So do we have Chris Doering? Apparently having a little trouble getting hooked up with him. We are also Rob Lewis at 4:35 is going to join us, and then we've got Mike Keith of the Tennessee Titans joining us as well. So let's see if we can get through this little glitch in our trying to get Chris Doering. Meanwhile, a couple of other notes that are out there as far as the NFL. Pete Carroll says Seattle's interested in wide receiver Antonio Brown. Is that a mistake? Do you think Seattle would actually take him?
Well, I think they would be a good spot if someone is going to make that happen because of the culture they have there and the way Pete Carroll can connect with players. I heard a soundbite, Jimmy. I didn't hear him come out and say that. He talked about the GM evaluating every situation. Maybe there was another soundbite out there, but the one I saw, he was vague, and they were asking him about it, and he gave a vague answer that his GM was just checking out every situation, and we'd go from there. But that's all he had. That's all I heard.
Well, that's what I heard too. And I saw another blurb that said Seattle interested in Antonio Brown. I guess maybe they interpreted what he said. But I was like you. What I saw on Pete Carroll, he was noncommittal. So, by the way, the opt-out deadline for players is Thursday at 4 p.m. Thursday at 4 p.m. There'd been some debate between the NFL. There'd been some debate between the NFLPA. In regard to this, but that is the opt-out date. It's Thursday at 4 o'clock. And we're now pleased to be joined by Chris Doering with the SEC Network. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Jimmy. It's good to be on with you again. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us, and I hope that you and your family have been safe through this pandemic.
Yeah, it's actually both of my kids and myself, we actually tested positive for the virus back at the end of June and dealt with that during the beginning of July. But thankfully, wow, it was very mild symptoms, and I feel fortunate that I didn't have to deal with what a lot of people in our country have dealt with this virus so far. So very very thankful for that.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you're doing much better than your kids are. The SEC announced the 10-game conference schedule only. Chris, were you in that camp? Do you think that was the right move to make?
You know, initially, Jimmy, I was not, because of my personal bias here, being a Florida guy. You know, I really was hopeful that they'd be able to retain the rivalry between Florida and Florida State. Three other SEC schools have those rivalries that are played at the end of the year with the ACC. And so I thought that was something that was kind of a point that was wanted to retain that and just have, you know, maybe a conference-only schedule plus one, with the ACC being a natural partner for the SEC. But now, in hindsight, I understand why they did it. Again, when it's only affecting four of your 10 teams in your conference, that's maybe not as big of a motivating factor. The idea that you can control both the season, the schedule when you start, where you provide a little more flexibility in open dates, and maybe have a little bit more uniform testing throughout the conference and the way you go about through the protocols, I think makes a lot of sense in hindsight. So it was a disappointment to me, Jimmy, in the beginning, but in all honesty, I'm kind of getting excited about the idea of playing 10 conference games. And that was one of the things heading into, after the offseason last year, we talked an awful lot about was, hey, there's teams in our conference that we haven't seen in 10 years. And maybe having a little bit more frequency of play was something that had been talked about a lot the last couple of years. And so this is a great opportunity to expand the schedule with more meaningful games and to expose, you know, some cross-divisional opponents with teams with some experience they haven't really played as much of late.
There's been a thought that the SEC team should play the next 2 years of their crossover opponent. In Florida's case, it would be Alabama and Texas A&M. In Tennessee's case, it would be Ole Miss and LSU. Do you like that idea, or do you think they need to adjust it to try to pay more attention to strength of schedule?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. As a Florida guy, I don't love it because, as you mentioned, that's a pretty challenging pair that you're adding to the schedule. This was a year that a lot of Gator fans were excited about the way the schedule played out for them, with Florida having their cross-divisional rival LSU on the schedule every year and then having Ole Miss as the rotational cross-division team. It was a much better situation than it was for Georgia, with Georgia having to play Alabama and Auburn. Now, if you add Alabama and Texas A&M, I think things are either equaled out or a little bit more favorable for Georgia than they were before, with Florida's schedule being adjusted. So I don't love that idea. In general, I think it could create whatever the SEC decides, it's going to create some feelings of inequity and some folks with some bones to pick. But I would like to see them maybe take the last 2 years, maybe take the last 5 years, look at winning percentage. And I know that doesn't necessarily predict, you know, how good a team's going to be in 2020, but I think that could, at least you add one team that's above this number and one team that's below this winning percentage number, and maybe that is a way to try to balance it out a little bit more.
Chris, as entering the season prior to the scheduling changes the SEC had to make, did you like the Gators to win the East over Georgia? Because it seemed like a lot more people were in that camp, or did you look at it otherwise?
Yeah, I thought there were a lot of things that made this a favorable season, including the schedule that I mentioned a second ago. But I also look at the uniqueness of this year and the challenges that Georgia was having to face without the benefit of spring practice, without being able to be together on campus for the majority of the off season. Like, you're talking about a new offensive coordinator coming in with two new quarterbacks that are transferring in that haven't played a down in the SEC, with an offensive line that was completely decimated last year. You lost your offensive line coach. I mean, there's just so many question marks, particularly on the offensive side of the ball for Georgia, that I thought it really made things a little more advantageous for Florida. With the loss of practice time and some of the off-season conditioning, it's going to affect everybody. But I think that the teams that can minimize some of those impacts are ones that have continuity in the coaching staff, which I think Florida certainly does, and then, you know, experience at key positions, which Florida also does. In a year where there's a lot of turnover at the quarterback position, Florida has one of the better returning quarterbacks in the league in Kyle Trask. So I think that's an advantage. And there's a lot of returning players with a lot of experience on both sides of the ball for the Gators.
Chris, you mentioned challenges. Another challenge that could present itself for a lot of college football teams is opt-outs. Do you anticipate that we're going to see more of that in college football and specifically in the SEC?
I'll be honest with you. I look at these types of things through the lens of a former player. You know, when I was a player, I never wanted to miss a single rep in practice for fear that somebody was going to get that rep and take advantage of it and I was going to lose my spot. So missing a practice, missing a game, you know, that was not an option for me. I do understand that this is a unique circumstance with the pandemic, and maybe I'm a little bit biased because of what my personal experience was after, you know, testing positive for COVID back at the end of June. But I have a hard time believing that I would have been able to opt out of a season. You know, I'm shocked at the number of NFL guys that are opting out and the money that's being left on the table. So maybe I'm not a great litmus test for this right now, but you know, college players, the majority of them in the SEC come to campus with the idea of wanting to play in the NFL. And you know, if you're going to sit out this year, who knows what can happen in the future? You know, you give other guys opportunities to get reps in front of you. Maybe you don't get your starting spot back. Maybe, you know, there's some rust after a year. So I just, you know, for me, football is there's a lot of risk involved. You have to have risk tolerance to play football. I would be more fearful, in all honesty, of the impact of CTE and concussions than I am about the potential of getting the virus. Because when it's all said and done, I honestly believe the majority of the people in our society are going to have the virus. I mean, it's incredibly contagious. We don't have a vaccine yet. I think you need to minimize the risk as much as possible, but I think there's more risk in playing football because of the injuries than there actually is because of the virus, in my opinion.
Our guest, Chris Doering, SEC Network. Chris, would you have a different idea as a college player if you had a pre-existing condition? And I bring that up because Tennessee has an offensive lineman that's had a history of blood clot. So if you had a pre-existing condition, would that alter your thought?
Yeah, I think it definitely would. And, you know, I was looking at it from the lens of being healthy and not having any underlying conditions. But, yeah, with Trey Smith, obviously, you know, that what he's gone through in the past, I think it would certainly be something that I would have to think twice about. You know, it's you're talking about life and death and playing college football, getting to the NFL, those things are great. But being able to survive and live a healthy life is more important. And I really feel for him what he's gone through the last couple of years. It was amazing to get to see how well he played last year and coming back from the previous stints of battling those blood clots. So hopefully he's able to recover fully and find a way to get back out there whenever that may be.
Chris, I think that Dan Mullen's done a terrific job at Florida. 21 wins his first 2 years. He's done a really good job with the quarterbacks, whoever it is, whether it was Franks the first year, Trask the second year. But I do wonder also from this perspective, I looked at this note about Florida. So they're down to 3 defensive tackles for this year. They don't have a junior or a sophomore defensive tackle on the roster, according to what I read. So I look at what he's done, I think that's great. And then I look at some of the recruiting, and I wonder a little bit, what are your thoughts on Dan Mullen? Do you feel like he will have long-term success as the Gators coach?
No, I do. You know, I think he's done one of the best jobs in the conference the last couple years, not only in terms of the wins and the way that they've, you know, had back-to-back 10-win seasons and the success, but I just look at what he inherited. This was a team that went 4-7 in the year before he took over as the head coach here. Georgia had dominated Florida in the prior couple seasons. I think it was 42-7 in 2017. He's created a confidence in those players that he largely inherited and has led them to believe that they can compete with anybody. It's a one-possession game heading into the fourth quarter 2 years ago against Georgia. Last year, it went down to the final possession with a chance to get the ball back and potentially tie the game. So this is a really good overhaul of the program in terms of believing that they're as good as anybody else. Now they're recruiting at a really high level, and I think this coaching staff is one of the best that I've been around when it comes to developing players and putting them in positions to be successful. Go back and look at some of the innovative things that he's done. The offensive line really wasn't very good the last 2 years for Florida, and he's found a way to overcome that in a lot of ways. Go back to LSU 2 years ago. He implemented running the speed option to help you know, negate some of the advantage that LSU had on the edge of the defensive line. So I really think he does a nice job of putting players in positions to be successful.
Chris, how much can not being able to do the normal things in the off season hurt passing games in college football early on this season, do you think?
Yeah, I think it can hurt a ton. Just from my own experience, we talk a lot about how much things have changed from when I was at Florida in the mid-90s to the way it's done today. And we spent large portions of practice on a daily basis just throwing and catching with the quarterbacks, running routes on air to develop timing, being able for the quarterbacks to know exactly where we were going to be, how we were going to run a route. So much of the passing game is predicated on just having a chemistry between quarterback and receiver, and with the very limited time these guys have had together, it's certainly going to impact. I mean, Tennessee's in a good position with having a lot of experience back at the quarterback position, but have to replace a couple really good offensive weapons at the wide receiver spot. But, you know, I do think there's an advantage having veteran quarterbacks in any season, particularly this year. But it is negated a little bit if you don't have the opportunity to work with the receivers and really develop that timing, really develop the trust and understanding of how each receiver is going to run the same route, maybe a little bit differently.
What else do you think about Tennessee's situations? Obviously turned the season around last year, 6-game winning streak to close things out, a lot of momentum and expectations this year. How do you view this year's Tennessee team under Jeremy Pruitt?
I'm excited about it. You know, I just go back to sometimes things work out the best, and the old Garth Brooks, thank God for unanswered prayers. I think Jeremy Pruitt got the right guy, and it may not have been the first, second, third choice, but they got a guy that I think has brought some discipline, some accountability. The players have really seemed to react well to him, which was interesting. He's maybe a little bit more of an old-school type coach, but there seemed to be a good connection and a lot of respect between the players that he inherited and the coaching staff there now. They're lighting it up on the recruiting trail, which is great to see. And I'll tell you this, as a Florida guy, I long for the days of the big matchup in early September between the Gators and the Vols that more times than not only decided who was going to go to the SEC championship game, but who was going to win the SEC championship.
Mm-hmm.
So I look forward to watching Tennessee and their resurgence. That's one of the programs in this league that we need to be good, and I think there's a lot of reason to hope given the way that the Vols finished the season last year.
Our guest, Chris Doering, SEC Network. Chris, what are your thoughts on Jarrett Garantano?
I like him a lot. You know, I like the competitive nature. Didn't necessarily love the decision to do his own thing against Alabama last year, but I think he learned from it like you're supposed to do. I mean, you know, people make mistakes, and he made that mistake. I don't think it was a selfish mistake. I think he wanted to try to do what he could to help his team win a football game. Maybe wasn't the best decision in hindsight, but I think he's learned from it. The resiliency which he shows from that, the way he came back from that, the way he's come back from games, the way he came back from the bowl game where he didn't particularly play well and found a way to win. Just a lot that I'm impressed with how he doesn't let mistakes, doesn't let errors get him down and finds a way to come back and fight and be successful. The persistence, the resiliency, those are traits that I admire a lot. And in all honesty, that's what football is all about. You know, I mean, football's about finding ways to overcome adversity, by getting up when you get knocked down, and that's why I think football is such a great vehicle for teaching kids about life. So many of those lessons are applicable in the post-playing days, and I know he's going to be successful whatever he does because of those traits that he has and being resilient and perseverant.
Now, under the circumstances that we've had, it's been challenging for all programs. You mentioned you like a team with a veteran quarterback. So what would you prefer, a veteran quarterback or a veteran coach?
Oof, man, that's a tough one there. You know what? I would probably say veteran coach. I mean, I think you can find ways if you're a guy that's played in this league before. I mean, I think that certainly helps having experience coaching in this league, being able to draw from those experiences. I think, you know, I look at the acclimation that the four new coaches in our conference are going to have to make this year with 10 SEC conference games.
Yeah.
It's that's not a great welcome to the league. So I as much as you know, I'm fond of having experienced quarterbacks as a former receiver, I think I'll take that coach that's been there, done that a little bit, and finding ways to battle through what is a unique circumstance to everybody, in whether we're talking about veteran coaches, whether we're talking about newcomers, or we're talking about players. This is all uncharted territory we're dealing with right now.
Chris, thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate it. Great to catch up with you. Glad that you and your kids have recovered from the virus. And hopefully we'll have a chance to visit with you again because we're having a college football season.
Yeah, let's keep our fingers crossed about that. And love to be on with you anytime, Jimmy. Make sure you you hit me up again, okay?
I sure will. Chris, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Thanks,
Chris. That is Chris Doering with the SEC Network. When we come back, we'll have more. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. This is Sports Talk. Oh, and by the way, Chris joining us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. This is Sports Talk, 99.1 The Sports Animal.
In your car, in your office, in your house, in your shower. 99.1 The Sports Animal. Pass the body wash.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Farrar. Vince, what stood out to you about what Chris Doering said?
Well, the way he was different in his stance when talking about players with pre-existing conditions, including Trey Smith, versus, hey, I'm a player, I want to play, there's great danger and risk in playing football. So I understand that. A lot of athletes, I think, have that opinion, and there's nothing wrong with having that opinion. What the tough thing is that there's so many unknowns of the virus. You don't know what it's going to do to everyone short term and long term. So those unknowns are what scare some people. And then there's also bringing it back to other people if you do get it, and putting it, you know, passing it on to someone that is of much greater risk than you alone as a athlete, a football player, and the inherent risk that comes there. So that would be, you know, just a difference in you know, to what he, that viewpoint. But I understand it, and I think a lot of people, a lot of athletes share that thought process. And if you can keep them safe and know that the players competing are not at risk and they're being tested and hopefully staying safe to limit any passing on of the virus, then let's go. And so that was one. The other thing is the passing game impacting the game. We're going to get right to SEC games, as you know, Jimmy, and there it's probably not going to be too pretty early on, especially with the passing game. And that's probably another conversation we could have. And what are the things that are on this Tennessee football team or in football in general that are going to be most impacted? So I thought he validated that point also. And clearly he's been high. Anytime I've heard him on the SEC Network, on Sirius XM, where he does the SEC Network, his radio show, he has always been very complimentary of Jeremy Pruitt and high on this Tennessee team. So I thought he, you know, he was consistent in those things with us today.
Yeah, and there's one thing also that I thought was kind of intriguing. I think Dan Mullen's done a outstanding job at Florida the first 2 years. As Doering pointed out, Mullen took over a 4-7 program. He's won at least 10 games 2 years in a row. But here's what I wonder. I wonder if he's going to continue to have a really productive and good offense built around a quarterback and with his recruiting, and maybe the defenses aren't quite as good, because I just think it's alarming that they don't have a junior or a sophomore defensive tackle on the roster. They got three senior tackles, and then they got incoming players, freshmen. That makes me wonder down the road whether he's going to be able to have championship-level defenses at Florida.
Well, the transfer portal is always something that Florida is looking into, Jimmy. And Jonathan Grenard was one of their better pass rushers who transferred over to them from Louisville. So that's always an option. But, yeah, that you always want to have your development in-house, and then the transfer portal can be something to stop a gap here and there. But those are some big holes that something went wrong in the recruiting cycle somewhere that you're going to have to make up for. We'll see how that plays out. But that's an interesting note.
I'm told that UT's classes start August the 19th. August 19th.
Yeah,
practice for the 17th. So that, in effect, is why the 20-hour rule would be applicable with Tennessee there. Okay. When we come back, we'll be joined by Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com. We got a lot to cover with him. If you have a question or comment for Rob, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. With Vince Ferrara, I'm Jimmy Heim. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
This is VFL Josh Malone, and we're counting it down. It is just
53 days until
it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go on!
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrara. Pleased to be joined by Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com. Rob, how you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How about yourself?
Doing great. Thanks for joining us. Eve Pons has announced he's returning, I think to nobody's surprise. But what do you think that does for Rick Barnes' team that he's got the reigning SEC Defensive Player of the Year back on the roster?
Well, I think it means, this is what it felt like when last season ended, and with the recruiting class coming in, that Tennessee is one of the favorites, probably along with Kentucky, to win the SEC championship, to be a top 10 team, to be a team that's capable of making a deep run in March. Without Eve, you only have one senior on the team. With Eve, you bring back your starting front court. As you mentioned, the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, a second team All-SEC selection, and your leading scorer in John Fulkerson, a guy who, like Pons, has gotten better each and every year he's been here. Expect to see continue develop from both of those guys based on how hard they work, based on what we've seen from Rick Barnes and his staff over the 5 years that they've been here in terms of getting improvement out of guys. And I really like the mix experience and young talent that Tennessee has on this team. You're bringing in two five-star freshmen in Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer, who have been generating a lot of buzz just in the off-season stuff that they've been doing this summer. You're bringing back a couple of sophomores that got thrown into the fire last year, and Josiah Jordan James and Santiago Vistoni, who should be better from the experience, and in Josiah's case is healthy, just has a chance to be a really, really talented team, Jimmy. I think when you look back in 10 years and take what people do in the NBA into account, I think this team is going to look more talented than the 31-win team from 2 years ago, just in terms of raw talent. Now, but can they be that good? Can they produce like that? Now, that I don't know, because so much is going to depend on the freshman.
I do not think Pons would have been a first-round draft pick had he stayed in the draft. For him to reach that level, what does he have to do his senior year?
I don't know that he can, Jimmy. I don't mean to be negative on him. I don't know if he's got that kind of ceiling as a skilled basketball player. Now, I think he can play in the NBA. I definitely think that. But I don't know that he's a first-round pick. To do that, he would have to really be a knockdown three-point shooter, not somebody that comes off screens or pulls up off the dribble and hits threes. Just a guy that makes open three-point shots at a 40% clip. And he would really have to – I think really have to improve as a ball handler. And I'm not sure that he is that kind of a – I'm not sure that he has those kind of skills. Now, athletically, he doesn't need to do anything. He can play – he can go up there and play defense, I think, right now. And I think that's what he will do. But to really improve his value, he's going to have to be a guy that, in addition to be able to guard three or four positions, I think he's going to have to be somebody that can really help space the floor. And, I think he can do that. I think he can be a guy that stands in the corner and makes threes. He made 35% from threes last year, but I just don't know that he can get himself to where he's a first round guy. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I don't want to. I'm not trying to sound critical, Dave, because I certainly think that he can play at that level. I think he will play at that level, but I think as a defensive specialist type of guy.
Rob, there was a little bit of announcement deadline drama yesterday, as you know, with Sean Farnham pulling back his tweet on Ponds initially and then going back and announcing it along with Jeff Goodman after that, which maybe had nothing to do with Ponds himself. But do you think that this was a difficult decision? Do you have a feel for how difficult a decision this was for Ponds?
Oh, yeah. I definitely think it was a difficult decision. I think that's why it took so long. I think he definitely toyed with the idea of leaving. I know, and in talking to some people close to the program on Sunday, that they felt like he was going to come back, but they didn't know that for sure. You know, he's giving the indication that that's what was going to happen, and I certainly feel like that was it was a decision that he really struggled with, because I think he had a great chance of getting drafted, but you know, somewhere in the second round, and there were just no guarantees. And this is just such an unprecedented time for these kids. I mean, he didn't have the chance like Admiral Schofield did 3 years ago, when Admiral had the chance to go to the draft combine, got some very specific feedback on what he needed to do to see where to be drafted, and came back to Tennessee and had a great senior season, got drafted in the second round. I mean, he and all the other underclassmen in his shoes didn't have the chance to gather that kind of information and make an informed decision. So they were either going to have to roll the dice and hope they got picked. And he decided not to take that chance. Now, another thing that made me think that he was, that he would be willing to do that is because the prospect of not getting taken and playing overseas, I don't think would have been as daunting to him as it would be for a kid that grew up in America. I mean, he could go back home and play and get paid. So I think that was another element of this that put some uncertainty into it. And I will say this, now, Jimmy, I don't know if you saw this, but there was an article in The Athletic last week, and I've done some research, and apparently it's true. While yesterday was the deadline for the NCAA's deadline to declare for the draft and maintain your eligibility, the NBA's deadline to declare for the draft is August 17th. So the way I read that is that that's kind of a loophole for all these guys. A two-week window to maybe get some, to maybe change their mind. Now, that's from an article from The Athletic from Sam Fitzsiems, who does a great job. I would imagine that he's correct. And so I wonder if all these guys just really don't have two more weeks to, kind of gather information and make a decision.
Interesting. I know the preseason polls, Rob, that everybody's got their own version. They're not gospel. They don't mean anything. But we've seen a little bit of a variance in opinion on the ones that have been put out since all the draft deadline declarations have been made, like E. Ponds. And I've seen Tennessee as low as 20 from Jeff Goodman. And I think Seth Davis had Tennessee at 11. Maybe there's more. Where would you put Tennessee in terms of a preseason?
I would lean more towards where Seth has them. I think Tennessee is a fringe top 10, 8, 9, 10, 11 team. I don't think they're a top 5 team. I mean, I think they could get there if the freshman are as good as advertised, if Victor Bailey or Viscovi or Josiah can nail down the point guard position. If they identify a third big man, is E.J. Anasicki the legit guy off the bench who can come in and play 20 minutes? Is Jiros Plagic or Olivier and Camwar, are they better than they were a year ago? But I don't know as much about what everybody else in the country has as a guy like Seth Davis or Jeff Goodman. I kind of have tunnel vision looking at Tennessee and to a lesser extent the rest of the SEC. But I think Tennessee definitely has the potential to be a top 10 team.
Rob, if you had to project right now with Ponds returning, assuming, what would be your starting lineup?
I don't know what's going to happen at point guard, Jimmy. After that, I think you've got Ponds and Fulkerson locked in at the 4 and the 5. I have a very hard time thinking that Keon and Jaden are not going to start at the wings. And then I think you've got some intense competition for point guard. I think the guys I just mentioned, Victor Bailey, now eligible after sitting out his transfer year from Oregon, Josiah James, and Santiago. Springer is good enough to where he can play some point guard, so if you wanted to start Josiah on the wing or Viscovi on the wing, I think you could do that. I don't think you necessarily want to put all that on a freshman, though, at least to start the year. So I think those four are locked in, and then I think it comes down between, you know, Bailey Viscovia and Josiah, who emerges. And I think it's going to be, like I said, intense. And I think all three of those guys are good players. I almost lean towards Bailey being the guy and Josiah coming off the bench.
I had, and position-wise, this may not work. I had Bailey, Pons, Fulkerson, Springer, and James. So my difference would be I have James.
Keon Johnson is going to start. You write that in stone.
Okay, I'm going to write it in. Well, can I write it in pen?
You can write it in. You can write it a Sharpie for sure.
Okay. Oh well, there you go. Never mind. End of discussion on that one. No, I was debating between Johnson and James on that other starting spot. Why do you like Johnson so much? I know he comes in with a great defensive skill set.
I'm basing that on reports I've gotten from people that have been around workouts.
Okay. All right. He's very impressive. Are they as high on Springer as they are Johnson?
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know about as high, but certainly lives up to the hype. Looks good. I think that people have been surprised at how good Keon is. I mean, they knew he was good, expected him to be good. I think he has impressed a lot of people with just how good he is, how hard he works, his attitude for a freshman about coming in every day and getting better, and just the competitive aspect he brings to just, you know, kind of mundane drills.
And if Bailey wins a point guard job, why? Why would he do so?
I think defense, I think Rick was really frustrated all last year with the way Tennessee was able to defend opposing point guards, the way they were able to put pressure on the ball after Lamonte was out, I should say. I think that was one of his biggest quibbles with his team, and I think that's something that Bailey excels at. Now, I don't think he's a pure point guard. He's not a volume shooter or anything like that. I think he's just, earlier in his career, he's been more comfortable playing off the ball, but you know, he spent most of the year he was sitting out, playing the point, defending the point practice, and I think they're really going to like him defensively. Now, I could be wrong. I'm not saying he's going to win it, Jimmy. I just, if I had to handicap it, I give him a slight edge.
How do you think James would handle coming off the bench?
I think he'd be okay with it. I think he's a great teammate, and I still think he'd be playing 20, 25 minutes a game coming off the bench, like we've seen Lamonte do a couple years ago, like Jordan Bowden did a couple years ago. I think he would get a lot of minutes. And I think he's so versatile, Jimmy, which is one of the reasons. I mean, he could play three or four different spots for you. So he could sub in. You know, he could come in and relieve Pons at the four. I think Tennessee could do, or even a lineup that I think will be, I'll be interested to see. They have so much flexibility with Pons back and with a guy like James. You hear all this talk in the NBA, if you watch about positionless basketball, you know, just put your five best guys out there. I'll be interested to see if they don't tinker with, you can't do this for 30 minutes a game, but sometimes putting Pons at the five, you know, he's big, he's strong enough, can jump, you know, he can guard a lot of bigs. You know, he can guard a 6'10 guy at 6'6", 6'7", and you know, how many super offensively skilled 6'10 guys are in college basketball? Not a ton. So Pons at the five, Josiah at the four, and then some combination of Keon, Springer, Viscovi, Bailey at the guard spots. I think that would be a really fun lineup.
Is there any chance, Inosuke could start?
I don't think so. No, no, no. No way. He's not taking the spot. We're forced spot.
Can I write that in stone?
You can write that in stone. Not unless Clay gets hurt. But I have heard good things about him. Really, really like it. Very intense guy. Feel like he's going to be a high-level rebounder. You know, he averaged over 12 rebounds a game at the low major level. I'm not saying he's going to average 12 rebounds a game here, but they feel like he's going to be a big-time rebounder and certainly brings the kind of toughness and physicality that they were looking for when they added him.
Rob Lewis of VolQuest.com. He's on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. When we come back, we'll have more. I'm Jimmy Himes, along with Vince Ferrar, Sports Talk 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The Sports Animal and Alexa are best friends. Just tell her, Alexa, enable the 99.1 The Sports Animal skill.
Skill enabled.
Then anytime you want immediate Tennessee sports info, say, Alexa, play 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Okay, playing 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Hines with Vince Farrar. Our guest is Rob Lewis, VolQuest.com. He joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. Quick update, Preds 3-0 over the Coyotes. Third period, 8:30 left in that contest. Let's go to Steve. Steve, you're on with Rob Lewis.
Hey, Carlos.
Hey.
Hey. Rob, you know something about some highly rated player that is committed to Arizona State? And football, and committed to him in 2019. Supposedly still committed to him, but he really likes Tennessee. And I don't know where he's from or what position or anything.
Well, if he's in 2019, he's in school there.
Okay, well, he went to junior college then. I bet. He committed to Arizona State in 2019. But anyway, do you know somebody like that?
No, Steve. Based on that information, I do not know a guy like that.
Well, okay.
Now, I mean, the Nico Slaughter, I mean, are you confused about the Nico Slaughter?
I know Slaughter. I know that. Well, I mean, he's supposed to be recruited in this class, I was told. And he committed to Arizona State in 2019. He didn't sign. He committed. And the word is that he's still committed to them, but he really, really likes Tennessee a lot. So maybe I'll get lucky and find out a little something about him tonight for you, such a person. But it's supposed to be somebody. And kind of thought he might be a defensive lineman, but I'm not sure. There may not be anybody, but that's what I was told. But anyhow, oh, by the way, you missed your calling in life, Rob.
I hope not.
Hello?
It's getting late.
Hello?
I said I hope
Hello?
Not. It's getting late.
We must have lost him. Steve, we appreciate it. I'm sorry what happened there, but thanks for the call. Let's go to Gary. Gary, you're on with Rob Lewis.
I hate to come up with a simplistic question, but I'm really curious what you think about our chances for an upset on somebody other than Alabama, like I don't know who, but it looks like we got a lot of pinches because everybody can be sick. Alabama can have a lot of sick people. Hopefully, I'd like to see everybody healthy and win the upright some extra game or two this year.
So the best chance for Tennessee to upset one of the better teams on the schedule like Florida, Georgia, or Alabama at this point because
right.
We don't know the entire schedule. Rob?
I would have said Oklahoma if they were going to play that one.
Yeah.
Not that I would have said Tennessee was a favorite, but I just think, you know, playing that early in the year with a new quarterback, they lost a lot of guys in the draft. I would have of the big games Tennessee had this year, I would have thought that was, you know, I know it was on the road, but Tennessee's a veteran team, got a veteran quarterback. I think that would have been a chance for them to spring one, perhaps. You know, maybe he's not as a favorite, but that one would not have shocked.
Okay.
Of the others, and I don't know. I mean, I think they're all going to be tough. If you're talking about the big three: Georgia, Florida, Alabama. I guess, you know, I might say Alabama here just because, again, new quarterback, lost quite a bit to the draft, and kind of also based on how Tennessee played them down there last year. Right? And again, you know, big part of that was two of them went out late in the first half. I think it's a totally different game if that doesn't happen. But, you know, I don't know if – I assume Mac Jones will be their quarterback. I know they have a great freshman coming in. I don't know that he can win that job. I mean, he might, to a certain – was good enough, you know, to win a national championship, come in and win a championship when he was a freshman. And Saban wasn't afraid to start a freshman before Tua. So I just, you know, I think they're all going to be tough, but I just look at quarterback, playing them at home. I would maybe say Bama, and Jeremy's obviously really familiar with what they're going to do.
Hey, Gary, we appreciate the call. Vince, we got time for one more question.
Yeah, real quick, I just want to go back to the starting lineup discussion with Rob. You were talking about the two freshmen in that starting lineup, Keon and Jaden. Because of Keon Johnson's length and leaping ability, athleticism, they're both super athletic, would he be sort of in a 3 versus Jaden in a 2? I know those are interchangeable, but would you kind of view him in that way if you had to slot him in?
Yeah, I mean, I would view him that way, but that's really the same position. And I mean, offensively for Tennessee, I mean, it gives, you know, Keon might guard a bigger guy on the other end, but Jaden is more of what you would think of as a classic, you know, scoring guard than Keon is. Whereas, I mean, Keon can certainly score the basketball, but that's, in my opinion, you know, I've seen them both play several times as high school kids in the summers. Keon can, I mean, and Jaden is really good, too. I don't need to through him at all, but I think he's a future NBA player. But his forte is scoring the basketball, whereas Keon can do so many different things. He's going to be one of the best defensive players in the league, I think, the moment the season starts. He is that good. He is tenacious. He brings a tenacious attitude to play it on that end of the court. He's not a young guy that you're going to have to convince that playing defense is important, that giving maximum effort on that end of the court is important. He's coming to campus with that kind of mindset. He's just all around really the mindset that you want. I mean, works hard, gets it, and is a tenacious competitor.
Rob, yes, what's going on with
that's a long answer, Vince. That's a long answer. He's more of a 3-man, and Jaden's more of a shooting guard, a prototypical shooting guard, really.
What can we find on BallQuest?
A lot of Eve Pons talk yesterday, Jimmy, what it means for him to be back, you know, kind of what it means for Tennessee going forward. A lot of recruiting talk. We didn't really get to it today, but, I mean, I guess I'm sure you guys talked about it last week. Tennessee got a commitment from a guy that in the Demaryius McGee staff really wanted, defensive back from down in Florida. A lot of content on that, breaking down what that means for this class that's really, you know, on the verge of filling up here. And, school hasn't even started back in August. And we will certainly continue to cover recruiting going forward. And hopefully, Jimmy, hopefully we'll be talking about fall football practice in the near future.
Gosh, I hope so. Hey, Rob, thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it. And look forward to visiting with you again next week.
Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoyed it.
Thank you. And that's Rob Lewis, FallQuest.com, joining us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. When we come back, we'll be joined by Mike Keith with the Tennessee Titans. If you want a question or comment, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.